Imagine for a moment you hear a knock at the door and you notice that there are three women waiting outside, none of whom are wearing face masks and they're not practicing social distancing. To give you an image, let's say these three women are Bev Williams, Lisa McDougall, and Pastor Claire. Upon opening the door, they say to you, "The coronavirus is done. No more restrictions. You can go back to normal without fear. You can go back to work. You can go back to school. You can go back to church." What would you do? Would you shut the door on them? Would you believe them? Would you go online and try to confirm what they are saying? In the gospel narrative, this is where the disciples found themselves on that first Easter morning. Today we're looking at Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. Let us listen for God's word to us and explore how two particular disciples responded. On that same day, two disciples were traveling to a village called Emmaus. They were talking to each other about everything that had happened. While they were discussing these things, Jesus himself arrived and joined them on their journey. They were prevented from recognizing him. He said to them, "What are you talking about as you walk along?" They stopped, their faces downcast. The one, named Cleopas, replied, "Are you the only visitor in Jerusalem who is unaware of the things that have taken place there over the last 3 days?" He said to them, "What things?" They responded to him, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth. Because of his powerful deeds and words, he was recognized by God and all the people as a prophet. But our chief priests and our leaders handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped he was the one who would redeem Israel. All these things happened 3 days ago. But there's more. Some women from our group have left us stunned. They went to the tomb early this morning and didn't find his body. They came to us saying that they had even seen a vision of angels who told them, 'He is alive.' Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women said. They didn't see him." Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people! Your dull minds keep you from believing all that the prophets talked about. Wasn't it necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" Then he interpreted for them the things written about himself in all the scriptures, starting with Moses and going through all the prophets. When they came to Emmaus, he acted as if he was going on ahead, but they urged him, saying, "Stay with us. It's nearly evening and the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. After he took his seat at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Their eyes were opened and they recognized him, but he disappeared from their sight. They said to each other, "Weren't our hearts on fire when he spoke to us along the road? And when he explained the scriptures for us?" They got up right then and returned to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying to each other, "The Lord really has risen. He appeared to Simon." Then the two disciples described what had happened along the road and how Jesus was made known to them as he broke the bread. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What a great story our gospel text gives us today, and I want to highlight just a couple of things that stood out to me in this text. In verse 13, it says, two disciples were traveling to a village called Emmaus. Now, scholars aren't entirely sure where this city is, and not a whole lot is known about this city. But as Barbara Brown Taylor describes it, it's a place that we are all familiar with. She says, "Everyone has walked down that road to Emmaus at one time or another. It's the road you walk when your team has lost, when your candidate has been defeated, when your loved one has died. It's the long road back to the empty house, the piles of unopened mail, to life as usual, if it can ever be usual again. It is the road of deep disappointment." Seemingly, this road to Emmaus is where many of us find ourselves today. Seniors who should be walking across the stage to receive their diplomas, one of our youth who is celebrating her birthday today and was going to be baptized in worship. Family members who are unable to say goodbye as loved ones pass. Jobs that have been lost and hours spent trying to get unemployment with no success. Medical conditions that are no longer receiving appropriate care or attention. Maybe you find yourself, like these disciples, on the road to Emmaus. Others might see Emmaus as something different, but still familiar. Frederick Buechner describes it as the place where we go in order to escape, a bar, a movie, in my case, a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream. It's the place where these two disciples went to try to forget about Jesus and the great failure of his life. Whether Emmaus is a road of disappointment or a place of escape, it seems to me that most of us are looking towards Emmaus. There isn't a whole lot to get excited about right now. As we continue through our text, Jesus joins these two disciples, and this odd phrase appears in verse 16. It says, they were prevented from recognizing him. What an interesting sentence. Was Jesus wearing a mask? Were these two disciples so downcast that they couldn't recognize who was standing right in front of him, in front of them? What prevented them from recognizing Jesus? Much like the location of Emmaus, there is no consensus among scholars as to why these disciples were prevented from recognizing Jesus. A seasoned pastor whose opinion I greatly value has challenged me to approach situations, particularly in the church, with less certainty. Many who work closely with me know that when a situation presents itself, I've probably already thought it through and have come up with a workable solution. Now, sometimes certainty will preclude other options. Sometimes certainty can hinder innovation and progress. Sometimes certainty just prevents us from recognizing Jesus when he's standing right in front of us. I imagine the disciples saying to themselves, you know, it looks like Jesus and it sounds like Jesus, but it can't be him. He's dead. I can think of one example right off the top of my head where certainty caused me to miss out on what God was doing. In my freshman year of college, while working at an internship at an after-school program, a colleague and I began talking. She indicated to me that she felt called by God into pastoral ministry and had a clearly defined vision of what it would look like. I told her from my place of certainty, there was no way God was calling her into pastoral ministry because God doesn't call women. I even went as far as to quote Bible verses like 1 Timothy 2:11. Today, I'm embarrassed about that experience. I'm also grateful that she continued to pursue her call because today she's leading a vital ministry in the state of Washington. Now, the church has practiced certainty throughout its history, especially in regards to exclusion of other people, whether it be Gentiles, women, divorcees, the LGBTQIA community, and even today based on political affiliations. I can recall at least three times where Jesus responded to religious communities who were practicing certainty, and I don't think he had anything nice to say to them. Throughout Matthew's gospel, Jesus says to religious leaders operating out of certainty, woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees. What was it he called them? Yes, hypocrites. In Revelation chapter 3 to the church in Laodicea, Jesus says, and this is my paraphrase, you act like you've got it made, like you know it all. I'm going to spit you out. So just to recap, when Jesus encounters religious people who operate out of certainty, Jesus tells them, y'all are hypocrites, and you're worthy of being spit out. Not very flattering, is it? Back to Luke chapter 24, in verse 25, Jesus offers one more statement. It says, you foolish people, your dull minds keep you from believing all that the prophets had talked about. Now I know sometimes the Bible can be confusing, so let me offer this statement in a more common parlance. You idiots! Sometimes when we practice certainty, particularly to the exclusion of others, we miss out on the Jesus who is standing right in front of us. So what are some ways that we can approach things with less certainty? Well, when Jesus arrived and joined these two disciples on the road, what was it he did? He listened to them. He asked them what they were talking about and listened. I think about this scene where a child walks out of their bedroom and turns off the light, When the child returns after a short time away, the light in the room is on. So they turn to their sibling and begin yelling at them. Why did you turn the light on? We're trying to conserve electricity. It was Earth Day this week. The sibling responds, I didn't turn it on. I didn't even go into that room. To which they respond, yes, you did. Who else would have turned it on? Slowly, a parent enters the scene, explaining that they were the one who turned on the light. Maybe you are experiencing scenes like this in the midst of these stay-at-home orders. How might this scene or the ones you're experiencing be different if you suspended certainty by listening? In verses 33 through 35, Cleopas and an unnamed disciple returned to Jerusalem, and they listened to the other disciples before sharing what they had to offer. One of the tools that I use to help me listen is this water bottle. I carry it around with me wherever I go, and when I need to listen, I take a drink out of it, or I crunch some ice. Because when I have water or ice in my mouth, I can't speak at the same time. Now, some of you who are in meetings with me, when you see me drinking, you're going to say to yourself, wow, he's really trying to listen. It could be that I'm just thirsty at that moment, but it also works to help me when I'm listening. Another tool to approach things with less certainty is staying curious. I'm here today in my office, and on my wall I have this piece of paper. It says, stay curious. I used this paper at an event, and at the end of the event they were going to throw it away, and I asked if I could keep it, and now it sits in my office as a constant reminder. Upon joining with these disciples, Jesus asks them what they are talking about. In verse 18, it says, the one named Cleopas replied, are you the only visitor in Jerusalem who is unaware of the things that have happened, that have taken place over the last few days? And surely Jesus knew what they were. He experienced it himself, after all. But he operates out of a place of curiosity. In verse 19, he said to them, what things? I think one of my favorite words in the English language is wonder. Last week, I heard this word while watching another church's online worship service. And yes, it's okay. If you can be fed watching other services, please do. Now, during their children's time, there was a staff person who was using godly play. And after telling the story, the staff person asked a few questions and began with the phrase, I wonder. This can be helpful when listening to someone you disagree with greatly, like maybe a political figure. I wonder what it takes to get one's skin tone that color of orange. Or maybe, I wonder what information this person has to conclude that. Or I wonder what stresses are causing them to move in that particular direction. This can also be helpful in a volatile situation when we are stuck at home. I wonder why my spouse, why it's so important to her that I take out the trash right now while I'm watching the NFL draft. One final tool. In verse 31, it says, their eyes were opened and they recognized him, but he disappeared from their sight. When the disciples let go of their certainty, the impossible became reality. And if the impossible is now possible, we're living in a whole new world. They could have turned away from it. Instead, they embraced it. Your session, your board of elders, is meeting this Tuesday night for its regular monthly meeting. Whenever we gather, we start with a behavioral contract of sorts that we all agree to abide by. And the last line of this contract says, trust ambiguity, because we are not here to debate who is right or wrong. Over the past month, your session has converted Mag Press to an online-only worship experience. Your session has approved online giving when in the past we were certain it wouldn't work. Your session has utilized a platform for us to meet online using Zoom. And in partnership with your deacons, your session has contacted you and provided care where needed. They have figured out a way to suspend certainty amongst themselves. So we have three tools for helping us approach situations with less certainty. Listen, wonder, and embrace the new reality. You know, this is usually the point at which I come up with this really cool acronym that would help you remember it, but alas, this week I don't have an acronym. It escapes me. But imagine for a moment, you hear a knock at the door, and you notice there are three women waiting outside, none of whom are wearing face masks and who aren't practicing social distancing. Upon opening the door, they say to you, "Coronavirus is done, no more restrictions. You can go back to normal without fear of spreading the virus. You can go back to work, you can go back to school, you can go back to church." What would you do? During this pandemic, as we continue on the road, or at least turn our faces towards Emmaus, may we travel in this direction with less certainty. May we listen, wonder, embrace the new reality, and by doing so, experience the resurrected Jesus in new and exciting ways. Amen.